Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Poppy Harlow, actually CNN anchor Poppy Harlow, and she is out with a great little book for children here in Christmas called, it's Christmas time, it's called The Biggest Little Boy, A Christmas Story. It's an illustrated book. The book's available everywhere. Poppy, I love the idea of people in your position who have, you know, some type of name recognition writing these books because it appeals to adults because we all know Poppy Harlow from TV, but the story here itself is just a beautiful story. Can you explain to me what your thought was going into this project? Because I think it has such wide appeal.
That means so much to me, Brian. Thank you very much. What a joy to be with you. Hi, everyone in Sioux City. From this Minnesota girl, I am still a Minnesota girl, even though I've lived in New York half my life. Now, look, this book was inspired by a true story. A few years ago, I'm walking through the Christmas tree market in Brooklyn with our family, and I'm carrying Luca, who's a baby at the time, and my baby Bjorn on my chest, and he pulls over, grabs a branch of a Christmas tree, tries to pull it over. Luckily, it doesn't completely collapse. And in a moment, I just remembered. I thought, this is a great story. But what's the message? The message is there is joy and real value in little things. We don't need the biggest things. We don't need all of these material things. And so that's where the biggest little boy idea came from. And really, a lot of it is about trying to teach our kids growing up here in the big, busy city of New York with a lot of material things that that's just not what matters, and that's the message of the book.
The story, it has to go from a story to a book, and so when you had this idea in your mind, what was the thought behind, hey, I can actually turn this into a book? How does that process work? So I'm fascinated by that.
That's a great question. I had no idea how to do this, so I literally just on my laptop, I think that night, the kids went down, opened Word, and I was like, okay, let's start writing my ideas down. Didn't have the headline, the title right away. Started writing my ideas down, then eventually asked my TV agent, Olivia Metzger, who's wonderful, how do I do this? She said, let me introduce you to Tina Dubois, an amazing children's book agent here in New York. And I went in and I met with Tina, and Tina was like, I see something here. And we worked together to craft this, and then we're thrilled to get to work with Tamar Brazis and the folks at Penguin on it. And they really helped me. You know, I wrote the story, right? And then it goes through many iterations. And then, of course, mine was like way too long. So we had to trim it down. But that's the process. It's just, you know what? You have an idea. Open up your computer. Grab a piece of paper. Write it down, right? And it's been years in the making, but it's been really fun.
And also, working with an illustrator, you have to find the right illustrator for a book like this because, you know, not every illustrator works for every different book. There's a lot of people who write children's books, and the illustrations, a lot of sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. You seem to have hit a home run here. How did that come about?
Oh, well, that is all. Thank you for saying that. That is all Ramona Kalitsky, this remarkable artist who I was lucky enough to get to work with. And you're right, the whole process, once you get a publisher to team up with you on a book, now it's about, you know, who will bring it to life. And this book wouldn't be anything without Ramona's art. It jumps off the pages. I was emailing with Ramona last week, and I said, your art makes this book sing, and it really, really does. And she just ran with it. Like, this, you know, this was her vision. Like, I remember getting the initial drafts of her artwork, and I had almost no changes because it just, she got it. So it's been a joy to work with her, but it's a process. You go through looking at a lot of different artists' work, then you may bid on them, and they may say, oh, I don't, the project doesn't fit for me. It doesn't work for my timeline. There's a lot of back and forth. So to get to partner with her, I hope it's the first of many collaborations for the two of us together.
I'm chatting with Poppy Harlow about her new book for children, The Biggest Little Boy, A Christmas Story. Such a great Christmas gift, and actually pre-Christmas gift. Use it for these advent calendars that everybody's pumping this year, because I hadn't heard of advent calendars in ages, and now everybody's using them. So give this instead of one of the chocolates.
There you go.
So, Poppy, you mentioned about being from the Midwest. You're a Minnesota, Minnesota native, and I saw the story that about the person that had the biggest influence in your life, your father. How much of your father did you think about as you were writing this book? Because there's obviously a parental aspect to it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for bringing up my dad. My father, Jim Harlow, is everything to me. He was a wonderful father, read me countless stories, as did my mother, Mary. And my dad died when I was 15. And so, gosh, I think about him all the time, and I have to just tell you, I was with our kids on Sunday night, and Sienna, my daughter, looked up at the stars. She's 5 and a half, and she said, Mom, there's your dad's star. I said, what? She said, well, didn't he tell you that he'd be the brightest shining star? Of course, she brought tears to my eyes that a 5.5-year-old, you know, thought of that and can process that. And so they remind me of him every day. Luca has my father's eyes, for sure, so I see my dad and him every day. And he was a lawyer who loved the law and taught me to love the law, so he's inspired me to go back to school at almost 40 years old to learn the law. So a lot of my dad and a lot of parts of my life right now.
So you're in law classes?
I'm in law school.
Oh, my goodness.
1 year, not a full JD. I'm taking a master's in studies of law year. It's a year-long program at Yale. So I'm getting on the train 4 days a week and going up to New Haven and learning from brilliant teachers and brilliant peers. And I have an amazing employer, CNN, who not only let me do it, they made the sort of impossible possible. So I'm endlessly grateful to my bosses here at CNN.
Well, you have this amazing job where you interview people every day, and I remember hearing Tim Russert describe how he conducted his interviews. He considered it like a cross-examination. You've got the law in your background, you've got the law in your blood, and I know your dad was a fantastic trial lawyer, as everyone who knew him would attest to. So do you have that idea of cross-examination in your mind as you're doing your interviews throughout your day?
Tim Russert is the best there ever was. Tim Russert was not only a phenomenal interviewer, but a phenomenal human. And, you know, his son obviously carries on that legacy, but what a man, what a journalist. What an ideal to strive to be anything like. Yes, they are cross-examinations. I mean, not every interview is a tough interview, but we owe it to our audience to cross-examine. We're the ones in the chair asking the questions, so it's a duty to our audience. He's absolutely right. I also think there is what I always appreciated about Tim is he never got heated, right? It was always respectful. And I think at this moment especially, we have to remember that there's a way to ask hard questions in a respectful way.
With the way that TV news works, I mean, the people's attention spans are not as long as they used to be. And so a lot of your segments, 5-6 minutes, you have to ask all of your questions there. And so sometimes you have to go off the script because people don't answer what you asked. And so how do you keep that, not only to keep it in the small window that you need, but to keep a guest on task when you're asking A and they answer B?
It's a great, which many are trained to do, by the way. That's a great question. I'm laughing because my poor executive producer in the control room knows I am the queen of not rapping. When they say rap, we got to get to commercial. I'm working on it. But it's true, because I feel like I have to ask a follow-up. They didn't answer. I have to follow up. I've learned lately, Brian, it's such a good question, that there's only so many times you can ask the same question that it becomes futile to the viewer, right? Like, you may want to press your point or look tough, but like, after 2 to 3 attempts, if they're not asking it, answering it, the audience sees that, and you move on, right? But you do have to follow up. It's not okay to ask a question, get a complete non-answer, and then move on. You know, of course I've done that. I make mistakes every single day, but if I'm having a good day, you got to listen to the answer and not just be looking down at your notes about what did you write to ask next, because often the best questions are the follow-up.
And then do you walk away from these interviews sometimes and go watch them again and say, darn, I wish I would have asked that? Or do you just have to close the book on it and say, I can't think about it, I got to move on?
I never watch them. Okay, I don't watch them. I cannot watch them. I don't even like listening to my own voice, so there you go. Of course, I torture myself over interviews. Not all of them, but I'm like, I can't believe that. I totally botched that. Where was my follow-up? My head wasn't in the game. Yes, I am my toughest critic. Yes. And I find that if people on both sides of the proverbial aisle are mad at me on Twitter, then I guess I've done my job, right? If they both think that I'm not serving their agenda, then I'm doing my job as an objective journalist.
The support that you get from CNN for these type of projects is great. We see this through the different cable news channels when different hosts write books. What's the reception been like at CNN when they hear you're doing this? Are they cheerleading you through the whole process?
Beyond. I mean, cheerleading this whole process on this children's book, for sure. But just look at what they've allowed me to do this year with going to get my master's in law. I mean, it's a lot of friends and people reached out and they said, how is this happening? Like, are you taking a leave from CNN? How are they letting you do this? And I said, no, they made it work. And I am just beyond grateful. I mean, I just think that's so rare. I think it's a lesson to other employers right now, especially there's such a shortage of talent. People are, you know, losing employees left and right. What is it that you can do for your employee that will make them endlessly loyal to you, right? And also, as an employee, you have to think about, well, how can I help my employer if I'm going to do this, right? So our agreement is I'm basically anchoring every single holiday. So whenever I don't have class, I'm here anchoring, doing what they need, filling in, et cetera. And we're filming a new show we'll announce soon for CNN Plus, our new streaming platform that launches in the first quarter. So every Friday I've been traveling to film for that, which has been a lot of fun. But, I've been at CNN for, since beginning of 2008. And it's family, for sure.
All right. The book is The Biggest Little Boy, A Christmas Story by Poppy Harlow. It's available everywhere. Check her out on CNN as well. Poppy, greetings from the Midwest. Thanks for joining us.
I miss the Midwest. Thanks for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.